Psalm 53, verse 1. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They're corrupt and have done abominable iniquity. There is no one who does good. Well, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. Atheism was not popular, really, in David's time. I don't suppose he is referring there to what we would call atheism. He's talking about the person who says in his heart, there is no God. And to whom is he speaking in his heart? He's speaking to himself. So David is talking about people who, in their self-talk, effectively say, there is no God. And he talks about this person as the fool. He may have in view Nabal, which means the fool, or you've got to remember that Psalm 53 follows straight on from 52, which is all about Doeg, the evil of Doeg, that Doeg did when David comes to Abimelech and takes Goliath's sword and is given food by Abimelech, and Doeg goes off and tells Saul what's happened, and Saul comes and kills 85 of those priests. So he's saying that these people in their heart are effectively atheists. And of course, we have to ask ourselves, we who are so sure that I am not an atheist, whether in our hearts we are not effectively acting as if there is no God. Now, I think that is true of us at times. But this whole section here in this psalm is quoted in Romans 3, verse 10, about all humanity. All humanity. And I think that's why in Romans, Paul at times talks about gross sins, what people might consider to be gross sins. Like in Romans 1, he talks about various kinds of sexual perversion and idolatry, etc. And then he quotes this verse that we've read in Psalm 53 about the fool being corrupt, doing abominable iniquity, there is no one that does good, and he applies it to all of us. Whereas David is applying it to a certain group whom he sees as wicked, whereas he sees himself as righteous. He says in verse 2, God looks down from heaven on the children of men to see if there are any who understand, who seek after God. And clearly, David assumes that he and a minority of righteous within Israel at the time, this is at the time of Saul's persecution of him, were seen by God as seeking after God and were okay with God, as it were. And yet there was this other group who he says effectively are atheists. They effectively deny God. They don't do good, not one of them. They do abominable iniquity. But the point of the quotation of it in Romans 3 is that this is all of us. And in fact, when you look more closely at how David describes these people, he is in fact no better. Verse 4, he says, Have the workers of iniquity no knowledge, who eat up my people as they eat bread and don't call on God? So he says, the workers of iniquity have no knowledge. But David, Proverbs 6:32, says that the man who commits adultery lacks knowledge. David committed adultery. He lacked knowledge, to put it mildly, in taking Bathsheba and in killing her husband Uriah. And yet have the workers of iniquity no knowledge, he says. They don't call upon God. This lot are basically damned. And yet later, David acts in exactly the same way. And this is why, in Romans 3, Paul is quoting this psalm and saying, look, this is all of you, this is all of us, every one of us, not just a group of wicked people within society. And then in Romans chapter 4, he presents David as every man. That as David describes the blessedness of the one who is saved by grace and imputed righteousness, who can offer no sacrifice because there's no sacrifice that covers your sin, he says that's every man. And so this is all quite sobering, that the line that divides good from evil runs right through the human heart. And there is evil in our thinking, in our behavior, and it is not so that society is simplistically divided into two groups. This is a common lament of Solzhenitsyn in the Gulag Archipelago, where he reflects on his time in the Soviet Gulag, in the prison camps and the labor camps, and says, you know, oh, that it was so simple, that you could just put all the wicked people in a labor camp, or just put them on an island, or just hook out all the baddies out of society and put them somewhere else. And he's saying that, you know, that this whole mentality, which was practiced at that time in the Soviet Union, was absolutely wrong, because he reflected that this line that he talks about that divides good from evil runs right through the human heart, and it's in every human heart. And who wants to accept that, as he says? And this is what you're seeing here, that David, in his relative immaturity, is saying that, look, I and my folks were the righteous, but it's the likes of Nabal and Doeg and these people who effectively deny God in their hearts, who need to be eliminated, and they don't do good at all. They're a bad, rotten lot. And then you look closer, and he says they have no knowledge of God. And you look closer, and you think about it, and you think, yeah, David, you committed adultery, and the man who commits adultery lacks knowledge. Are you much better? He talks about the deceitful tongue of these people that causes destruction. Well, did not he use a deceitful tongue to Uriah? Did he not deceive Uriah, as it were, and lead him thereby to his death? Sure, he did. And this is why Paul quotes these words of David about the baddies in society, and says this is all of us. Now, there is this sort of cops and robbers, cowboys and Indians, black and white sort of tendency in all of us, I think, to just divide the people we know into the good and the bad, and to judge in this simplistic way and to divide people up, when, as I say, we are all in this position. And it's not until you perceive that, that you will find humility, that you will then find a sense of awe and wonder at God's grace. Only then will you find the power to not be judgmental, because to be judgmental and condemnatory of others is a tendency of human beings. You see it in children, and that never stops, really. That basic tendency is there to judge simplistically, to divide people into two groups. For one thing, this is only for God to do, but the whole idea is that we are all in the baddie group. And the only difference is that we are saved by grace. It's like the wise and the foolish virgins in the parable. They all dropped off to sleep when they ought to have been awake. It was only those who took extra oil, who recognized that they were likely to run out, who recognized their weakness. It was only they who were saved. It's like the two sons, go work today in my vineyard. One says, oh, sure, I'll go straight away, and he doesn't. And the other one says, no, I'm not going to go. But then he repents and goes. Well, the two sons again in the parable of the prodigal, the elder son who says, I didn't do anything wrong, who ends up outside the father's house and fellowship by his own choice, and the younger son who messes up and comes home. So the choice is not between the good and the bad, the righteous and the wicked. It's between the wicked who repent and are humble, and the wicked who are self-righteous and won't repent. That's the final choice.